Chapter 7. Vigilante. For 3 weeks, he had spent most of his time with Cassandra, who continually complained that he was a turtle morph, or that he was morphstipated, or that he was a Gabriel operative who would always be ready for a mission by the time the mission was over. After 1 week of unsatisfactory morphing, she marched him down to the ident office and plopped him in front of Poe, a thin, dark-haired identity expert who'd modeled his looks after his famous namesake, down to the period clothing. "Poe here can get you something to help visualize your morph targets," she said. "It might help you. I'll let you two get started." She dropped her voice to not quite a whisper. "They're artists down here, so they're a little weird."
"Thanks, Cassandra," Poe said as she walked off.
"Well, Trace, what we do is a full body scan to help us create what we call a standard set of appearances you can use during your tenure with the Ash Angel organization. Most of these are generated automatically with the ident software, but since you are a blank and destined for the Gabriels, your standard set will be reviewed by an identity and appearance expert, such as myself. We like to ensure enough differentiation between the types, usually adding in a few handcrafted identities. First, I need to look up your initial survey and get your AAID.
"What's an AAID? Trace asked.
"Ash Angel ID. You should have received it your first day after your survey was processed."
"They didn't input me into the system. My trainer trashed my survey 2 minutes after I finished it."
Poe's eyebrows turned down in a V. "Surely you have an AAID, though."
"I don't."
"How do they keep track of you, then?"
Trace shrugged. "I think that not keeping track of me is the point."
Poe stared pensively off into the distance for a while. "That will make this process a bit more difficult. Are you sure you don't have one? It's a 7-digit code. I can make the idents without it, but I can't save them."
"I really don't have one, unless the Skolas wardrobe folks wrote it on my underwear," Trace joked.
"Could you check?" Poe asked. Not joking.
What should have taken a couple of hours took 4, Poe bearing the inconvenience with only minimal irritation.
Trace had walked away from the ident office with a folder full of identities of all ages and sizes, over 64 of them, and they helped. Having a picture in front of him sped matters up considerably, though Cassandra continually warned him that he needed to learn to make the changes without having to stare at a picture taped to a wall. Escaping sticky situations often required a quick change in appearance, and missions usually came in on short notice. To top it off, standard sets were not allowed outside secured areas, so Cassandra had confiscated his pictures after a week and forced him to morph without them. Until today. "Time for your ride-along mission, Jarhead," Cassandra told him and Priscilla after pulling them out of a lecture on the intricacies of acting like an elderly person.
"What's a ride-along mission, Cassandra?"
Priscilla asked, wringing her hands.
"It's like it sounds. You get to ride along with some real Ash Angels and watch them work. Maybe do some work yourself."
Priscilla shifted uncomfortably.
"Outside the confines of Trevex?"
"Yes, dear. We'll meet in the main conference room of this building in 4 hours. Before then, you're going to morph into teenagers. And you'll be graded, so don't screw up. Looks bad on my record. Jarhead, here's one of your standard set pictures. Go down to ident, get your clothes, and get to work. Priscilla, you're going to have to leave the flowery frock behind and put on a pair of jeans."
"I most certainly will not," Priscilla objected. "Ladies these days dress so—"
"Priscilla," Cassandra barked. "We are not in the 1800s anymore. You've got to dress like the rest of us or you'll be useless unless we have some need to infiltrate the Amish."
"The Amish? Do they still dress like decent folk?"
The rest of the argument faded away as Trace hurried to ident for his clothes and then to the locker room to get to work on his morph. His nervousness and excitement over an off-site mission hampered him, and what Cassandra could likely do in 15 minutes took him 3 hours to pull off to his satisfaction. When done, he had suitably punkish long hair, a gangly frame,
and ripped-up loose jeans that hung down enough to show some underwear. His real parents wouldn't have let him out of the house, and an old feeling of rebelliousness welled up within him as he admired himself in the mirror. Time to put all that training on acting like a teenager into practice. He just remembered that he and his brother Brandon would slough chores and complain about everything. Morph done, he headed to the main floor of TrevXD at 8:30 in the morning, its halls filled with instructors and administrators whispering in hushed, worried tones. He found Priscilla in the conference room center already, but dressed as an elderly lady instead of the ordered teenager. Had she actually won an argument with Cassandra? He would ask for tips. 12 plush chairs surrounded an oval table with a touchscreen top, and Priscilla pecked the screen with a tentative finger, her grandmotherly looks lending credibility to her complete inexperience with technology. She looked up when Trace entered, her face somber.
"Poor news this morning, Trace," she said gravely. "The Daily Brief says a secret Ash Angel operations station in Chicago was attacked last night. 6 Ash Angels missing. 2 confirmed dead."
Trace sat down by her, perusing the report. Another case of Dreads knowing where to strike with a strong possibility of inside help. Trace's heart felt like lead. "We need to get out there. Have they told you what they intend for you yet?"
"They have not. We aren't to expect our assignments until after graduation. I can hardly think of what use I will be. I can heal, I suppose, and apparently I am a prodigy at morphing."
"Really?" Trace said. "How long did it take you to defy Cassandra and morph into an old woman?"
"Just a few minutes is all. Though I was a bit distressed after arguing with that shrew. My goodness, what a contrary woman."
Trace nearly choked. "A few minutes? A few? It took me 3 hours to do this. 3! How are you so fast? Cassandra calls me a turtle morph, and apparently she's right." Priscilla's eyes widened.
3 hours? For shame, Trace. That is monstrously slow. It really is the most natural thing in the world. You simply fix the image in your mind, and your body accommodates."
"Yeah," Trace said. "So I've been told. My body doesn't like to accommodate." The door banged open, and he looked up expecting Cassandra. Instead, a middle-aged man strode in. He wore blue slacks and a white button-down shirt, top button undone. Trace recognized a good morph job. Baggy eyes bracketed by crow's feet, protruding gut, patchy face, and bloodshot eyes. His thick blonde hair was cut short and tinged with white just above the ears, and when he smiled, his dull yellow teeth screamed smoker. He had an aura and the bearing of a hunter, his gaze confident, his stride purposeful.
"You Trace and Priscilla?"
he asked, working his way over to them.
"Yep,"
Trace said, shaking the proffered vice-like grip.
"I'm Goldbow from the Michaels division. I'll be providing security on this op, though I wouldn't expect too much trouble. These ride-alongs are a walk in the park. Cassandra shown up yet?"
"No," Trace informed him. "What branch of military service were you in before you died?"
"Navy SEAL," he said proudly. "You in the service?"
"Marines."
"A blank with combat skills built in. Nice. If you want a shot in the Michaels, I'm sure Arcus Mars would love to have you."
"Yeah, he tried. Archon Ramus shot him down."
"You know what this mission's about?"
"No. Cassie's team leader and will brief us. All I know is we've got an actual mission rather than the typical ride-along fluff. It came down from one of the visionaries in the Oculum, so it will be straightforward. Missions from the Oculum cryptics are like trying to sort out an acid trip."
Cassandra had ensured that Trace attended the class on the Oculum. Of all the divisions, the seers of the Oculum were the most secretive and most protected. The visionaries saw things plainly, but the cryptic's visions presented themselves symbolically. Trained symbologists and the Skullists sorted out the cryptic's visions before passing them on to operations. Cassandra finally walked through the door, face buried in her phone, and Trace had to smile. Dressed as a middle-aged woman with kids, she had put on 30 pounds and crammed herself into cheap jeans and a faded blue sweater. every detail of her appearance utterly convincing, down to the chipped nail polish. No one who saw the dressed-for-dancing Cassandra would believe she and the dressed-for-laundry Cassandra were the same person. After the door shut, she looked up, face registering a hostile disgust.
Goldbo, don't tell me Ramus assigned—
Yes, he did. I'm on cherub rotation until they graduate. Good to have you back on the line, Cassie.
Trace knew Cassandra well enough to see she was strangling her anger in an attempt to keep from strangling Goldbo. It was the same look she gave him whenever she came back after an hour and he hadn't finished morphing yet. Only worse.
Fantastic, she said, sarcasm meter in the red. Fan-freaking-tastic. Well, I certainly feel safer knowing that you've got my back.
Priscilla bit her lip, and Goldbo looked toward the ceiling as if to implore the help of divine powers. Cassandra sat on the other end of the table from them.
Okay, folks, here is exactly what the visionary gave us.
A document appeared at each of their stations. Oculum Vision ID, number 290394829. Visionary, Jethro. Date received, 1/26/2016. Action date, 1/27/2016. Content, 183 Pleasance Place, Phoenix, Arizona, 10:07 a.m., January 27th. Image of a girl in a coffin, early teens.
That's sparse, Goldbo commented.
Cassandra flicked her phone screen and the document changed.
As you can see in this document, the Medius has confirmed that the address is residential and close by, which is why we got it. It's a 30-minute drive. We'll get there about 20 minutes before the indicated time to scope out the area. We're not sure what to expect, but with death in the vision, we'll be cautious. Any questions?
What is our part? Priscilla asked.
Cassandra opened her mouth, but Goldbo jumped in.
You two will sit tight in the car and observe. Do not get involved. You'll get to see two experts at work. Isn't that right, Cassie?
She ignored him.
Just do what we say and you'll be fine. Most cherubs only get to go pick up litter or hand out toys at a shelter. You two get the real deal here.
Let's review our identities. Goldbo and I are Richard and Vanessa Hader. We've been married for a while, but have called it quits because Richard values work more than his wife, doing whatever his boss wants and leaving me behind to take care of everything by myself.
Give it a rest, Goldbo protested, though Trace was unsure why.
Trace here is our dense son, William, who takes forever to get ready and is apparently the only teenager on the planet with perfect skin. How about a few pimples, Billy dear? And our teenage daughter, Janet, apparently died and has been replaced by Grandma Joan, Richard's mom, who has really taken a liking to little Billy and tries to protect him from his mom and dad's ugly divorce. Got it, everybody? When we get inside the vehicle, I want everyone to act in character unless it is absolutely necessary to break out of it. Got it? Great. Let's go pick up our car and get going.
Cassandra bolted out the door. Goldbo sprang after her while trying not to look like he was springing after her.
This should prove most interesting, Priscilla observed. Most interesting indeed.
Trace sensed she wasn't talking about the mission.
I hope you know where the garage is, because I don't.
With a little help from some friendly ash angels, they learned that the garage was a quarter mile away on the edge of the more industrial part of the Trevex complex. Trace squinted in the bright sunshine as they went outdoors, a leisurely breeze ruffling Priscilla's ample dress. The pleasant walk ended abruptly when they entered the six-bay Ash Angel service garage, finding a storm in full progress at the side of a late-model blue Ford Taurus. A hapless Ash Angel in a mechanic's jumper stood awkwardly to the side as Cassandra and Goldbo jawed at each other.
"You drive everything like it's a tank. I'm driving," Cassandra said.
"Look, Cassie. In good old Middle America, the men usually drive," Goldbo countered. "We're not shooting down the Autobahn here."
"So it's a macho thing, then?"
"No, it's good operational sense. What's the problem with you, anyway?"
"What's the problem?" "It's you and your—"
And then she noticed Trace and Priscilla observing and choked off her words.
"Let's flip for it, Cassie,"
Goldbo suggested, attempting a light tone, as if everything had been a joke.
Great. Heads. And let it hit the floor so you can't cheat.
Goldbo won, and the mechanic tossed him the keys. He and Cassandra got in the car in a huff, and when Trace and Priscilla jumped into the back seat, it felt like they were in an icebox. Goldbo started the engine, and Cassandra announced that everyone should act in character from that time forward.
Are we there yet?
Trace said in a whiny voice, attempting to thaw the Arctic atmosphere. Priscilla didn't get it, and Goldbo and Cassandra didn't react. The car pulled out onto the road, and Trace slumped in his seat and prepared for a long ride. After a sly wink in his direction, Priscilla pulled out her embroidery and got to work on her angel. An abyssal silence reigned until Goldbo drowned out the offending quiet by turning the radio to a country station. Cassandra spoke.
You know how I can't stand country, Richard. If I wanted to hear about someone's screwed-up life, I'd read your autobiography.
My life is screwed up, Vanessa, Goldbo spat back. Fine. Let's listen to your metalheads, because those guys aren't messed up at all.
Goldbo hit the seek button until some thumping guitars and drums boomed through the car. It was Priscilla's turn to twist her face in irritation.
What is this horrible racket? For pity's sake, something a bit less grating for a lady.
Fine, an annoyed Goldbo said, flipping the dial to a classical station.
Priscilla smiled.
Thank you, Richard, dear.
How about you, William? Goldbo continued. You need Dad to do anything for you? Has Mom stopped the beatings yet, like social services told her?
I gotta pee,
Trace responded, just to say something that wouldn't drag him into the disaster going on in the front of the car.
We can't stop for a potty break, Billy, Cassandra said, or we'll be late. And don't be crude, William,
Priscilla scolded. Trace slumped as far down as he could until they arrived at the Linden subdivision at 9:45. Goldbo turned off a peppy sonata that contrasted nicely with the leaden fuming in the car. The neighborhood's manicured yards, pools, and large lots were upper middle class, orderly, and sporting all the hallmarks of near affluence. 183 Pleasance Place was a ranch-style, light brown stucco, accented with dark rock and landscaping old enough to have trees that cast a significant shade in the morning sunshine. Several cars jammed the driveway and curb.
It's a funeral, Trace said shortly after they pulled up and parked opposite the house.
Pink bows were looped around mailboxes and trees, while flowers of all varieties lined the porch. The vehicles probably belonged to family and friends. Why would their mission take them to a funeral? Cassandra's phone beeped and she read the screen.
You're right, Bilster. Just got the details from the medias. This is the home of Jared and Charlize Preston. Their daughter Lucilla died 3 days ago of leukemia. The funeral's at 10:30 a.m. today.
Several minutes later, the darkly dressed family poured out of the vaulted front door and crammed into the cars. Not long afterward, several of the neighbors followed suit, emptying the houses. It was 9:56 a.m.
Should we follow them? Trace asked.
Their car, a little old and beat up for the likes of Pleasant's Place, sat conspicuously on the curb across the street, inviting curious stares.
We're not outfitted for a funeral, Goldbo observed. But if the family leaves the house, we should get eyes on over there.
The vision was for this address, Cassandra reminded him, but then her face lit up. Let's split up. I'll take our dearest son, Billy Boy, here for a walk around the neighborhood while you and Granny Jay head to the funeral to keep watch there.
She didn't wait for a response and got out of the car before Goldbo or anyone else could protest. Trace jumped out. Goldbo threw up his hands, put the car in gear, and sped off after the steady trickle of cars exiting the neighborhood. Cassandra watched him leave with her hands on her hips.
Good riddance, she muttered under her breath.
Her frumpy housewife attire was all part of the plan, but Trace was unsure if the haggard look on her face was part of a disguise or a remnant of the chilly car ride. Trace hiked up his pants, finding the low-riding jeans quickly becoming an annoyance.
Time for some quality time with Mummy, Billiam, Cassandra said as they meandered casually away from the house and down the street.
Shouldn't we stay close, Mom? Trace asked. If this is what I think this is, then no, Cassandra answered. We'll scare them off, and you can drop out of character now, Jarhead.
Who would we scare off?
When I was doing time as a beat cop,
Trace's eyebrows went up. You were a cop?
Is that so weird to you? Anyway, thieves would read the papers and look for funeral announcements and then rob the house when the family was at the viewing or the funeral. Total bastards.
That's low.
Yep.
They walked in silence for some minutes, with no real path or plan, until 10:07 a.m. neared, and Cassandra led them to a discreet vantage point behind a monstrous SUV parked 40 yards down the street. She stopped and started fake listening to her phone. Trace watched the house through the tinted windows of the SUV. At precisely the time indicated in the vision, a nondescript gray van drove up the street and backed into the Prestons' driveway. Two men in jumpsuits piled out, walked to the front porch, and tested the door. It opened. The Prestons had forgotten to lock it.
Yep, just as I thought, Cassandra said.
So what now? Trace wondered.
We call the cops, she replied, starting to dial the phone.
Trace couldn't believe it. He swiped the phone out of her hands. Call the cops? Are you serious? So the Oculum has this vision, and we get this assignment to come over here so we can call the cops? We're Ash Angels. These jerks are robbing a family who just lost a daughter. Do we really want them to come home to police cars and missing stuff? Cassandra's face scrunched up.
What's your problem, Jarhead? Give me my phone before I discipline your baggy teenage butt right here.
With a quick pull, Trace ripped the battery out of the phone and stuffed it in his pocket. Here's your phone, he said, tossing it back before sprinting toward the Preston's house. Cassandra's mouth dropped open, and she yelled at him to come back. He ignored her. It was time to make a difference. As he had discovered during training, running as an Ash Angel was pure joy. No exhaustion, no cramped muscles, no ragged breathing, just a dead-on sprint that could last forever. He hopped the three steps to the door, still slightly ajar, pushing it open and walking in as if he owned the place. Walking down the beige tile entryway and scooping a phone from its base in a nearby living room, Trace followed the sound of the nervous, gruff voices. As he emerged into an open kitchen family room area, the two thieves in jumpsuits regarded him with surprise, setting down the 50-inch flat screen they had just pried loose from its mount above the fireplace. Both were scroungy lowlifes who appeared exhausted from waking up before 10 to rob a house. Trace tossed the phone to the one on the right. He juggled it, but kept it from falling to the floor.
Call 911 and tell them the house is being robbed.
We're not robbing the house, kid, the one on the left lied easily.
We're taking the TV in for repair. So why don't you just run along? It's real nice you looking out for your neighbors and all, but this ain't none of your concern.
Trace smirked and nodded.
Right. So, a family from a nice neighborhood asked a couple of slime bags in an unmarked van to come pick up their TV while they were attending the funeral of their daughter who died of leukemia 3 days ago.
Start dialing. It'd be nice if the police could pick you two up before the family gets back and actually has to see you. The two men turned to each other as if waiting for the other to figure out what to do. The man with the phone threw it on the leather couch across the room.
And if we don't, what are you going to do, you little pissant?
Beat your face in until you beg me to stop. So what'll it be, guys?
A trace of doubt flashed across their faces before their testosterone took hold and they laughed, only a hint of nervousness remaining. The larger of the two, a bald, slightly overweight man with protruding eyes, strode over to Trace. He stood a full 6 inches taller than the teenage-sized Trace, who stared back unblinkingly. The thug looked down menacingly, breath hinting at an early morning beer.
You want to say that again, little punk?
Sure, I will beat your face in until you beg me to stop.
I'll let you hit me first. I mean, assaulting a juvenile. Wonder how long you'll get to play prison bride after that. A light knock on the door distracted them both.
Oh, Billy dear, are you in here?
Cassandra called sweetly.
Trace did his best whiny, scared teenager voice.
Mom, these two guys said they're going to hurt me if I tell anyone they're robbing this house. What do I do, Mommy?
Cassandra walked forward, turning on her actress mode.
They did.
She pulled the BBG from her ample black purse and pointed it at them.
Whoa, lady,
the thief in front of Trace exclaimed, stepping back with his arms raised.
You bothering my boy?
Cassandra said.
No, the man said, glancing back at his partner. Your boy thinks we're robbing the place, but we're just here to get the TV to the repair shop. It's just a big mistake.
Cassandra looked disgusted and lowered the gun a foot.
Oh, really? And what's the name of your repair company?
The two thugs looked at each other nonplussed.
That's what I thought. So what's the plan, Billy Willy Puddin' Pie? First, make them hang the TV back up, Trace suggested. Well, shouldn't we leave it for the police, honey?
No, Trace replied.
The family has gone through enough without having to deal with an attempted robbery and the police asking questions and searching the house to make sure nothing else was taken.
Cassandra cocked her head to the side.
I hadn't thought of that.
She waved her gun at the men.
Put it back. Fast.
She put a little crazy back into her voice and they snapped to it.
When they're done, Trace said, bring them out to the van. I'm gonna go check it out.
Trace left the house and opened the van. As expected, it was a mess of beer cans and trash. The middle and rear benches of the vehicle had been stripped out to allow room for cargo, a couple of televisions, a computer, and four laptops occupying about half the space. Two cases of beer sat behind the front seat, a bag of marijuana in the glove compartment, and a stash of well-traveled pornography under the passenger side seat. An idea, cruel but satisfying, crept into Trace's mind. Cassandra shepherded the two crooks out the door, closing the door behind them. Trace clambered into the driver's side door.
Put them in the back, Mom. Sure thing, darling Billy.
In moments, they were pulling out of the driveway, Cassandra in the passenger side with the gun trained on the two cowed thieves. Trace hoped no one in the neighborhood had seen the van at all, and there would be no indication that the attempted robbery had ever taken place.
So, Billy, what now?
Cassandra asked, eyes curious but intense.
Well, there's a case of beer behind the seat. Have them start drinking. Then call Dad and tell him we'll be about half an hour. Oh, here's your battery.
Cassandra played along as they drove around, forcing their captives to drink beer at an accelerated rate. By the sweat on their faces, Trace could tell they were freaked out, and he expected them to start begging for mercy at any second. He drove around the suburbs until he found what he wanted, an elementary school. He drove 100 yards away and parked the van on the side of the road.
Can I have the gun for a minute, Mumsy?
Sure, sweetie cakes. This is your show.
Trace trained the weapon on the thugs.
Listen up, dumbasses. You do what I say and no one gets hurt. I'll even let you get your van back. Strip. All of it.
Cassandra, there's a marker underneath the map and pot in the glove compartment. He turned back to his reluctant captives and thrust the gun at them.
Do it, or I'll burn your van down with you in it.
They complied. He took the marker and gave the gun back to Cassandra.
Okay, turn your backs to me. If either of you moves, Mom will blow a hole in you so big you could throw a football right through it.
With a smile, Trace drew a swastika on each of their backs. Cassandra's eyes shot wide and she stifled a laugh.
What did you draw?
The big man asked, craning his head.
Get out, Trace ordered after he was sure no traffic was coming.
You heard him,
Cassandra added. After opening the rear doors, they clambered out, covering themselves for modesty.
Your van will be down the street. Come and get it, Trace taunted, closing the doors.
He hopped back behind the wheel, turned the car around, and sped past the school about 100 yards in the other direction. "Now call the cops," he told Cassandra. "Tell them a couple of men are streaking past the elementary school." They got out of the van as Cassandra called it in. A few moments later, they sprinted down a nearby street and ducked into a park. A call to Goldbow came next. When she finished, she regarded Trace and shook her head, trying hard to keep a serious face.
"Do you have any idea how many forms you're going to have to fill out?" she finally asked.
"Nope." "So you were a cop? How much time will they get for a naked, drunken streak through a school zone with swastikas on their backs and then trying to get away in a van full of pornography, stolen goods, and marijuana?"
"It depends on if the cops buy their story about a mom and her mean kid forcing them to do it."
She exhaled.
"You are so busted, Jarhead. Ramus is going to have your head and mine."
Her tone lost its mirth and started to carry the same weight and anger as always. "Stop morphing into something different in case the police come looking for us." The morphing proved unnecessary as Goldbow pulled up in the Taurus a couple minutes later. They hopped in, and when they pulled up to the intersection, they had the pleasure of seeing the two men up against the van in handcuffs as naked as the day they were born. Priscilla averted her eyes.
"Oh, dear."
When Cassandra told the tale, doing her best to infuse it with a disappointed tone, she got nothing but laughter in response.
"Trace," Goldbow said proudly,
"that is the best thing I've heard in a month of Sundays. You are the man."
"Well, at least until we get back to Trevex,"